Hello, everybody. This is the Blizzard Watch podcast. We have a special guest this week who I've already had introduce himself on the pre-show, but since this is being recorded for people who are not listening to the pre-show, I'm going to do it to him again. Curtis, could you please say hi and tell people who you are?
Sure. Hi, I'm Curtis McCatherine. I was a WoW developer for about 9 years of my 11 and a half years at Blizzard, and I just recently left. I'm here to hang out with these lovely people today. It'll be a lot of fun, I hope.
Yes, and to prove the fun part, we have two other people who are going to bring the fun while I bring the babbling incoherency. Liz Harper and Joe Perez, who are both, you guys know them from every week, but they're cool too, and it's good to have them as well. Thanks for being here, guys.
I should say the important part about the me not being at Blizzard anymore was that I didn't need permission to come on, so it wasn't
You didn't just quit Blizzard and they made him come on this as a penance. you must go to
the Blizzard one.
It's like Game of Thrones. You have to like stand on the wall and, you know, it's still snowing. Yeah, it'll do that.
I just had the thought to come on when I left. It wasn't like I was like internally going, let me go. And they were like, no, I don't know that I ever thought to ask.
Until such time as you do the Blizzard Watch podcast, may you be released from your gun. Also, that's when we'll take the brain bomb out.
I do believe the brain bomb is out. But if I at some point like stop talking, you can check on me.
All right. We will absolutely make sure that you are you're still with us.
He says no, Curtis. So anyway, Kurt's here. We should talk to Kurt about things. But first, we have the various events that make up various Blizzard game things that we can talk about. One of the ones I wanted to bring up was this kind of a really weird story / non-story. This week, I think it was yesterday, because time, of course, compressed. I have no idea what day it is anymore. I think it's Tuesday. So NetEase was said by the Chinese media to be suing Blizzard. And I think the company that had the Blizzard licenses before NetEase, like, am I right here? Like, that was what they originally said, that it was Blizzard and I want to say Tencent, but I don't think it is Tencent. It's Tencent is, I think.
I think we were with the nine.
Yeah, it's okay. The nine. Thank you.
I thought NetEase like was the nine or bought the nine. So they're kind of the same thing now.
I don't know. And I didn't see this. So I don't
it was
know
just,
sure.
It was just in the article that that's who they were supposedly suing. And then today, I guess it turned out Blizzard was like, well, we don't know that we're being sued, but we're sure we didn't do anything, which is one of those responses you kind of have when you don't know what the heck's going on. And so people dug into it and it turned out that NetEase isn't suing anyone. Somebody who's sued NetEase a lot is suing Blizzard for like, I think like $200 worth of like refund time. And he just mentioned NetEase in his filing somehow, and it ended up being put in the complaint that NetEase was suing Blizzard, but they're not. So that was interesting. Go ahead, Liz.
It's something that's really gotten spun out of hand, and it was initially reported as complete 100% truth, and then like the day after, it's like, oh, actually, almost none of this is true. And it's like a disgruntled gamer who was just unhappy that Blizzard games are not in China anymore, which, I mean, I can understand that. That's pretty lame to lose an entire country. I would be pretty upset if I were like playing World of Warcraft and Blizzard was like, yeah, next month it's just going to be gone. You can't play it anymore. That would be very sick.
Yeah, but it's still interesting that, I mean, at least in China, the media really ran with it. And I think to some degree over here as well, because I heard about it. I heard about it like 10 times
there.
And I was bedridden yesterday. I couldn't even get up. And I heard about it.
It's some spicy news.
Yeah. Well, it was also happening during a cycle where like weird things happening to or about Blizzard were like all the rage as far as like clicks go. So anything people could do to like drive content to their site, whether it was blowing something out of proportion or reporting this like little tidbit is absolutely true, seemed to like just kind of be the thing of the day, if that makes sense.
I mean, that was literally yesterday.
Yeah, it was yesterday. It was at a time when people were looking for controversy. That's now, man.
It's every day.
we're in a time loop. Oh, God. We're going to be playing cards and someone's going to tell Data that Dale. Anyway, so yeah, that happened. That was weird. I wanted to actually talk about this next thing just because since we have Kurt here, we can actually really kind of ask him some questions about the basic concept. Diablo 4 is having their server slam this month to come in May. It's not May yet as I record this, but it will be next week. They're having it, I think, on the 12th, I think, Liz?
The 12th to the 14th, so just a quick weekend event.
So Curtis, since you mostly worked on server teams and so forth,
yes.
What exactly is a server slam? What are they trying to do here?
So I don't know that I ever had heard the term server slam, but the idea here is that you want to do a concurrency load test. You want to get as many people on as possible. There's a lot of systems in any online game that that track things by players, and you've kind of got sort of two problems. One of them are the problems that scale linearly. So you can think about like everybody that's got to log in needs to, you know, store the IP that they're logging in from so that you can find them to send them messages. That's the same no matter how many, like you do that once per player and it doesn't matter how many other players are on when you do that. But there's other systems that you use that scale with what we call the square of the number of players, right? Or an n squared problem. Because for every player that joins, they potentially could interact with every other player that's already on, right? So like chat is a good example of that. Different kinds of parts of the world simulation are like that. So, you know, it's important to figure out like from an abstract perspective, which of those problems you have when you're writing the code. But there's also places where like there's interactions you don't foresee. And so literally there's just no substitute for getting a lot of players on and having them act like players. And so, you know, WoW has done this a couple of times with launch events in particular. We've had these big, you know, hey, everybody try to do the launch event from this time to this time. I think that they probably didn't get quite as much information out of the open betas as they wanted. I don't know. I wasn't talking to the D4 team at the time, but I'm super excited that they're going to do this and they're going to get to do this because I know that their server team is going to be able to learn a lot about the service during those 3 days that are going to make launch better. So
I was going to actually ask since I can't remember if it was 2021 or 2022 at this point, and I'm sorry, the entire decade is melting. But when Diablo II Resurrected launched, there was an issue with connecting to the server from the home game because it was running differently, but it was using the old Battle.net code for connection. Is that the kind of thing that you can only really detect with like a lot of players? Like, is that something, or is it even more? Are there other things that you would want to test in this kind of situation? Like what else, besides sheer crush of people, what else are we looking at?
Well, so the thing is that a sheer crush of people is really effective for finding things that are not necessarily sheer crush of people's responsibility, right?
And, but because there's more chances for the thing to come out.
Exactly, right? So, you know, there was a one of the things that Joe Rumsey, who was the original server architect on World of Warcraft, there was apparently a problem in Silithus at one point where like you could get knocked into a plant or something and then like you could never get back out. And the environmental artist who was talking to him was like, that's like a 1 in a million chance of happening. And Joe's like, if there's a 1 in a million chance of it happening, it happens 10 times a day on WoW. And you know, there's a lot of stuff like that that is just helpful to kind of flesh out, and you just don't know. It's not necessarily that the crush of players itself is going to force the issue, but it can be a like, hey, you know, we need somebody to connect over IPv6 who's using Wi-Fi from Windows 7. And, you know, all of these combination of events happen to cause this weird thing in the stack that causes us to get these two messages out of order. And we've never gotten these messages out of order before. But hey, when that happens, it's broken.
Yeah, it's like when you're looking at, I was explaining this to somebody at work the other day, like, one of the reasons you do that is like you just said, like it's you're trying to create as many opportunities for something to go sideways, but like you don't realize how many opportunities for something to go sideways like there are and how much different like variety there's on hardware and connections, stuff like that. I like going through like the Steam hardware profiles where you can actually go and see on Steam like what the most popular like processors are and RAM loadouts and things like that that people report back, and the sheer volume of like different things or different like builds and different like combinations that are out there is mind blowing. Unless you like, because most people don't really think about that, right? You don't think that you're going to get like an NVIDIA like 790 is still out there, like, you know, chugging away.
Well, and for a global company like Blizzard too, you have to deal with, you know, different companies are popular in different regions and do different things to computers, right? One of the projects that I helped work on for a little while was the new voice chat that we shipped in Battle for Azeroth. And one of the things that we got some bugs on after ship was there was apparently some, I don't know if it was like, I don't know that I ever figured it out. I think I left the team before they figured it out, but there was a process in China that some antivirus software or some security software, or maybe something related to the way that you could spy on a machine or could protect a machine, was replacing part of the TCP/IP stack, and it was doing it in such a way that wasn't compliant. Like it would cause this one particular call that we were using to return an error in cases that it was not happening anywhere else in the world. And it was just like, oh, well, great. We're using part of the Windows API and we're expecting a particular kind of error and we're just not getting it. Not sure how to fix, right? And so, you know, we spent a lot of time with China support trying to figure out like who these customers were without violating their privacy, but to find out enough about their machine that we could maybe figure out what was causing this. And like I said, I don't even remember that we actually got to a place where we fixed it before I left the team.
I remember there was like, there was also something that I think, was it you or somebody else was like gathering information because there was another problem. And it was such a wide variety. I'm probably misremembering because the caffeine is kicking in.
Yeah, there's so many of those. I'm not sure that I can speak into like. But that's
remember
that
time you were gathering right? information on a problem.
I just remember like I think you like made like a general Twitter call.
Yeah. So we didn't do that too often, but there were a couple of times that I was just at my wit's end that we were like, Jared Gillis would do this too, good friend of mine. He'd be like, hey, is anybody seeing this? Please. Please let us know because we're having trouble finding repro cases. Those are really frustrating for the players, and I feel really bad for every player that's ever hit one because, like, you can't play and you don't know why, and like it doesn't seem like you're getting any help. But at the same time, the developer on the other side is like, "Wow, like this combination of things I just have not seen yet."
Was it Liz? I'm really talking about the kitten thing.
Yeah, I was just about to bring that up. It was like the "Are You Kitten Me?" quest in Dragonflight. Which I did once, and then it never worked again. And it was like there was a forum post that said, "Well, we're having trouble reproducing this." And I'm like, "I've managed to do this quest once since the game was released, and all of my friends are talking about how this quest doesn't work, and how, well, maybe if we switch realms, it'll work. Like if we get on a different shard or something, it'll work." I remember at one point Corey sent me a message in-game, which is just, "We're Battle.net friends, but we play on different realms, and we don't talk back and forth a lot, especially not in-game." It was very unusual. Asking, "Hey, does Are You Kidding Me work on your realm right now? If so, can we group up so I can do it?" And it's like, it's weird because it can seem so commonplace and so everywhere to you, but, you know, there may be another player out there. Are the devs just, they keep trying to reproduce it and they can't see it, but it's like, this bug is everywhere. Why haven't they fixed it yet?
I mean, I remember being in a war room at my previous job for 72 hours for like a critical bug that we couldn't replicate, down an entire like country's worth of like email services. And it was like infuriating, and it turned out to be like some like really weird edge case that none of us could ever possibly plan for. Like those are the I like when Kurt's saying that they're frustrating, I know a little bit about that frustration, not a whole lot, but enough. I've lost enough sleep over the years. I joke about me not being able to play Overwatch 2 and being frustrated about that, and I know that that's something that is probably being looked at and worked on, but it's also one of those things where it's like I can only provide information and then sit back and wait. And yeah, I can only imagine that my weird edge case is as frustrating to support and developers as it is to me not being able to play or participate in the game, right? So, and I can't imagine how the average user responds to that.
Yeah, I'm a giant fan of The Legend of Zelda Wind Waker, and at the Wind Waker HD launch for the Wii U, I had it downloaded and I had it ready to go and I had taken time off, and then there was something wrong. I don't remember exactly what it was, but I couldn't play it for like the first 2 days. It just didn't didn't work on my Wii U. I ended up having to do like a factory reset or a wipe or something because some data had come down wrong in the download. And it was just like, well, I'm not playing that one for a while. And it's very humbling for you as a dev, right? Because you realize that for all of the people who had great experiences, like there are people out there who had some terrible ones, and there wasn't a lot you could do. To bring it back to the server slam, though, I don't know exactly why they weren't I don't know the specifics of the situation here, but I will say that a number of times when WoW has run stress tests in the past, like there's some bug that manages to make it where not that many people can get on anyway, and it's unrelated to the thing you were trying to stress, right? And so, I mean, one of the things that I'm seeing pop up on Twitter occasionally is the like, well, but didn't they have two weekends, like a closed beta and an open beta, like what additional data that they need? And I'm like, I can tell you there were probably things that they were fighting during those betas that meant that they didn't get the information that they needed, right? So plus I'm excited that they're doing this.
The idea that but they already had like two betas is like, guys, do you have any idea how many more people are going to play this game when it goes live than will be on any beta test you want to do?
Yeah.
Oh, like, yeah.
Even an open beta, it just... there are people who don't pay attention to stuff like this.
Yeah.
Who just get the game and play the game and then go back to their lives. They don't go to fan sites. They don't go to forums. They just play the game. And if the game, like if the tests don't detect anything when you've got, say, I don't know, I'll make up a number, 100,000 people on, but when you have 10 million people on, suddenly the thing is detected, that's going to be a problem. And there's not much, you know, you can just say, well, they had two betas already, but it's like, no, that's not the same thing, man. It is not at all. The first one was an early access, so people only got on if they had paid or, you know, given an invite by Blizzard themselves. That one is really not going to test the kind of thing that, like, you know, as many people as can get on, please get on. It's a different thing, which then kind of leads well to this little tidbit of news, which is that next week on the 2nd of May, we're going to see WoW patch 10.1 is going to release, which means something Curtis, I know Curtis has been there for, a new patch and all the attendant problems it brings, which I mean, we're super excited for 10.1. We've talked about it quite a bit. We're very much excited about Abyrus and so forth. I usually do something like say, hey, what's the thing you're most excited about? But I'm going to ask instead, Liz and Joe, have you guys gotten ready for the fact that your mods are going to be broken?
I'm always ready for that.
Okay.
I'm never ready for that.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, that's fair. I'm never ready either.
I have you know, a weird checklist for my mods and stuff like that I go through. And despite how many I run, I generally run a very light loadout these days. So like, I'm fine. It's not the worst case scenario. If I have no UI, the UI that they work so hard to put in, I can make it work.
I think it actually does lead me though to ask Curtis, how much do you play WoW nowadays? Do you still play it?
These days? I don't play that much, and you know, it's something that I feel kind of bad admitting on a podcast about the game I used to play, but the game I used to work on. But yeah, I haven't played that much lately. I will say the mod thing for me, I used a bunch of mods before I started working at Blizzard, and then you get so used to playing the game that way that like you can't fire up a internal build and have no mods.
Oh yeah, right?
You I just imagine. Feel lost. So like actually over the years, I've slowly been just removing mods until I pretty much play with them.
The only mods I use at this point, as the eye problems have gotten worse, are stuff like Big Wigs / Deadly Boss mods, because you know people are like, you gotta have to have this, so I download that. But otherwise, I don't use Bartender or anything like
that. Yeah, it was a while for me to learn how to heal without Bartender or without the one that you used to do spell clicking before spell clicking was a thing.
Click.
Yes.
Yep.
But then once you figure out how to heal with the default UI, it's like, I'm just not gonna download.
Liz, you were saying?
I've tototally lost my train of thought.
You're carry on. Healing, I
think. Sorry.
No, it's fine. Wait, this is every week. This is every week's podcast.
Yeah, it really is. You're getting the full experience.
Good.
Yeah. I was gonna say the only add-on that I really, really rely on is GTFO, because I'm a very audio response player when it comes to certain things, because I tend to tunnel vision when healing. So that's the one that, like, if I don't have it, I will feel it. But otherwise I could also just pay attention. But I don't want to do that. I just want something to yell.
Tunnel vision when healing is a real thing. I've played a healer in WoW for like 13 years. It's a real thing.
Go team healer. That makes three of us right here.
Occasionally having the chicken that like screams in my ear to move.
I was actually, I was a terrible paladin healer. Like I was super bad at paladin healing, but when I was a shaman healer, at the exact time when shaman could heal anything with just downrank chain heal.
I was going to say downrank chain heal made it really easy.
Yeah. I was just like, Downright chain heal, downright chain heal. We're going to fix this. You can't just heal everything with downright chain heal. I guess I'm done playing a shaman then. Oh, wait, I can punch things. All right, cool. We introduced maelstrom weapon. I guess I'm done doing that. Yeah, I am not good at change. It's a little funny because... Yeah.
Godless.
One thing about the eye problems, which I also have some eye problems, not as bad as yours, Matt, but you know, I'm getting old. Things don't work as well as they used to.
Yeah, it's generally the case, yeah.
The one thing that keeps stymieing me about Blizzard games is there's no like universal way to change font sizes. Like it's very easy to change font sizes in chat. But if you want to change font sizes in other elements of the interface, all you have is UE scale, and you can scale it up, and it scales everything up, and it scales way up. And I have noticed that particularly in some of the new features, the new talent interface, some of that text is real, real small. Some of that text shows up like it's in an 8-point font on my screen, and it's like,
yeah,
I need a magnifying glass or something, but there's no way to change it unless I set my UE scale to like 200%, and that would really be like vanilla, where you want a healer and you had like 30% of your screen that was not healing bars.
Yeah, I just funny because before we actually started the real podcast, Curtis was telling a story about, you know, people kludging together solutions and Rube Goldberg-ing their way through. I think it was making ramen with a coffee pot.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I actually, because my biggest problem is reading quest text now. Mm. Quest text is just too small.
And there's
like nothing. I've gotten add-ons. I've tried using the in-game stuff. Nothing was fixing it. So I actually take pictures with my phone of quests and then make them bigger so I can read them. And that's like kludgy as heck, but it's just, this is how it has to be. I definitely wish that there was just a, you know, if there was just a box, make email font bigger, I would be like, yay. I had an add-on that did it, but it kept also adding voice acting and little animated heads.
Immersion mod was what was the workaround that a lot of people used to use for that. My partner used to do the same thing because their eyesight is, you know, the same. It's not as bad as Matt's, but they had a problem reading quest text and stuff.
I am
like
the
that.
Rhode Island of bad eyes.
So.
It's not as bad as Matt's, but like, yeah, how big is it? Well, it's bigger than Rhode Island.
But that was the workaround, was to use immersion mod, but it added the voice acting, it added the heads and everything.
Really, that means we should probably move on to some other stuff really fast. We have really discussed 10.1 in detail up to this point. I feel like, do you think we should just do a quick rundown of what's in it, Liz?
I think we can do that next week when it's live and everyone can play. Cool. One thing I've noticed, here's some inside baseball for you, about talking about game features on the website. It's like we try to post things really early so they're available when people need them and are interested in them. But a lot of things, people start being interested when it's actionable, when they can do something about it. And that's when they go from, this may be interesting and maybe I'll click on it. That's when they go from that to like 10,000 people clicked on this guide today kind of thing. So... yeah, we can talk about that next week and dig in.
Right. Well, I should mention that also this week, until I think the Turbulent Time Walk Ways event is still going. It's a time walking event. Are we in week 4 or 5 of that or what? I don't. We're on Burning Crusade now, but I can't remember which week this is.
We're on week. It's way more than the third week, Joe.
What is time?
Hurt me.
I think after this, we have one more week.
All right.
I'm being told that this is the last week in chat.
We've got Outland this week. Burning Crusade. Yes, that's what it's called. Yes. We're doing Burning Crusade this week. And I think we're doing Wrath of the Lich King next week.
Yeah, Wrath of the Lich King is the last one.
It does overlap with patch 10.1. So I kind of wonder how many people will be playing it next week, because you're going to have all of this 10.1 content, but it's there. If you feel like taking a trip back to Wrath, you can do it.
All right. I wanted to ask Liz about this one, cause I don't know anything about it. The Talantis map in Overwatch Arcade, which is a non-canon map designed, reading what you put here.
Yeah.
Non-canon map designed with the community over Twitch last year. So what is this? And
I spent some time this afternoon figuring out what the heck is this? But it is. It's literally the devs and the community got together on Twitch and were like, let's design an Overwatch map. They did that back in December, and now they're putting it in the game. It's only available as an arcade mode for a week. It is it's an underwater base. It's called Talantis, like Atlantis. It's supposed to be like an underwater base built in the ruins of Atlantis, I think. And it's an interesting map. It makes a lot of use of like jump pads to get places. And it has, obviously it's underwater base. It's surrounded by water. It has this kind of interesting vibe. But one of the things I really thought about it is like, it feels like a player created map in that it's kind of rough. Like the design of it looks really cool. The style of it, having all of these jump pads to let you access places and go in different directions that you wouldn't usually be able to do. But it's like, it doesn't have textures. So it's just kind of this like white kind of silvery color, all of the walls. And you just, it's very strange. I was talking with Mitch this afternoon about how it feels like a mod map that someone created for the game. And then we kind of went off on, wow, if Overwatch let you put in map mods, that would be super cool. So it's interesting. And if you want to see what kind of crazy ideas the community came up with, go in Overwatch Arcade and play Talantis, because it is interesting. It's an interesting experiment, I guess, they've done.
All right. Did either Joe or Kurt, do you have anything you want to say about that? You don't have
Sounds
to.
Sounds fun.
Okay. One day I hope to be able to play it.
Oh, yeah, that's one. Kurt was talking before about things that can't be replicated easily by the dev teams. Joe hasn't been able to play Overwatch yet since Overwatch 2 came out, and they know that it's happening, but they don't know how to fix it.
Yeah, so that's an example of that. And to be perfectly clear, I'm cool. Like, I'm not mad about it. Stuff happens.
Yeah, but no, I'm just pointing out that it is an example
of
that.
Yeah.
Let's see what else we got.
You know,
here.
You can be both cool and mad.
Kurt, I have like 8 games deep that I'm behind on and need to play. Like, so it's yeah. fine.
Okay, yeah, I, turn time. Sorry, guys. I have to like look at this list of things at the same time. So.
What's that list?
I just finished Horizon Forbidden West last week because I have so many games and I'm so easily distracted and there's so much going on. I can't keep up.
You know, I'm upset because I couldn't finish it because when we moved, I lost my PS4 in one of the boxes and I still haven't found it. I just unpacked all my book boxes and it wasn't in any of them. So I can't play it. I don't have a PS5. I can't afford a PS5. It's like I'm not going to ever get to finish that game until they finally bring it out for PC in like 4 years. And that's sad because I loved Horizon Zero Dawn. I thought it was a really great game.
We really shouldn't talk about Horizon or I will take over the rest of the podcast.
Yeah. No, go for it. You're here.
I could go off on Horizon. It's so
Feel free.
It's great. Like, I can see the difficulties and problems with it. It's not a perfect game, but I love it. I love it so much. I want 10 more games right now.
It's so good. I did not play it at launch because I didn't have a PlayStation and in general wasn't playing too many single player games. And when I did finally get around to playing it, I played Zero Dawn and then I immediately played through it again. And then like 3 months later, I was like, oh, this is great. I'm going to do it again. And so I played through it again. Anyway, I played it through like 5 times the first 12 months that I knew it existed. And I used to do this thing every year where I would play through. I mentioned this, I think maybe in the pre-show, that I was a big fan of Wind Waker. No, it might've been already after the main show. But anyway, I used to play through Wind Waker every year. It was like an annual tradition. It was like in like November, I would be like, Christmas is coming. I'm going to play through Wind Waker. I don't do that anymore. I now do Zero Dawn because it's such a good game and I love it so much. I'm actually playing through New Game Plus Forbidden West right now on Twitch while I'm between jobs. So
highly recommend plug.
I will have to turn this on.
Shameless and, plug. Tomorrow morning, I'll be streaming more New Game Plus where we've gotten two of the subordinate functions. So we've got two more to get. We just recovered beta. So it's good. It's a good game. Should definitely play it. I'm such a fan. I bought the PlayStation VR 2 that I could play Call of the Mountain. And as a climbing simulator, it's a really great game. It's fantastic. I love the whole IP. I love the whole genre. They could make 10 Horizon games and I would buy them all. So.
Yeah, I've lost track of the amount of people who, upon hearing about this game, were like, Ross, you must be playing it, right? It's Robot Dinosaurs. That's your thing, right? And I'm like, yes, but unfortunately for you, I have oppositional defiance disorder. So the more you insist that I play this, the harder it is for me to play it. So shut up and let me play it myself.
I had not heard that that was a thing, Matt. Oh, but thanks for saying that, because my oldest son has the same reaction to Ender's Game.
Is your son either does he either have autism or ADHD?
I'm not going to talk.
No, I don't have to talk about it. I'm just saying, because as someone who just discovered they had ADHD this year, so many things came out of that discovery. And one of them is oppositional defiance disorder, which is, it comes from, there's a reaction that everybody has that's just oppositional defiance.
Yeah.
That is a common thing that some people have, that most people have to a degree, one way or the other. But if you have oppositional defiance disorder, what happens is it becomes much stronger. Like it's almost like OCC, like, you know, it's almost like, oh, I'm so OCD. I you know, it's like that. But with someone tells you to do something. So you're like, no.
Well, Matt, you should definitely never play Horizon. I don't want you to ever play it anyway, man.
I just
I'm oppositionally saying it.
Yeah, I got never play it. Unfortunately, it doesn't.
You will disappoint me if you play it.
It's reverse psychology does not work on me, but yeah, absolutely. It is one of those things that has shaped my, for lack of a better word, geekdom. Like when Firefly was out, and everyone was like, "Matt, you have to watch Firefly." I've never watched Firefly.
Oh,
like, oof, dope, didn't do it.
I'm not sure that it would hold up now.
It doesn't. It does not.
The time.
Nothing does.
The time.
Nothing gold can stay. But anyway, that is. I loved the idea of Horizon. When I finally got to play it, I was actually shocked at how good Ashley Birch was. Shocked. Because, I mean, not that I was shocked because, you know, Ashley Birch is terrible, but shocked that they could give someone that nuanced a performance. Like, you know, and I've not seen many like it.
Oh, and Forbidden West is so good with that.
It really is.
Liz?
The real thing I think about Horizon Zero Dawn and Forbidden West is it does such a good job with side characters. Like, every side character has a unique personality. They are like a fully realized person. There's no one who just, you go in and they're like, okay, I need you to kill 10 rats. They're over there. Go kill, 10 robot rats and come back to me with some robot rat hearts. There are plenty of fetch quests, but none of them feel like fetch quests. They all have a reason and a purpose in the world. And the voice acting on every character, like Ashley Birch, amazing. But like every little character, the voice acting is top notch.
I will say this.
Really much. Amazing.
I will say this much before we try to get back to, you know, the show we're actually doing. I remember in Forbidden West, one of the things in the beginning that I noticed was when you meet up again with the characters that you knew in Horizon, there's a lot of that kind of thing in just in brief moments. When the king shows up and is so obviously like, hi, it's me, the smoldering king. And you're like, yeah, that's great, Your Highness. I love the energy, but I'm going to have to stop you because I'm involved in a world-spanning quest to save everything and don't have time for your crush thing. That's great, though. Really good to see you. I really liked they have, I don't want to say simple because they're not simple, but they have like really well thought out, but able to be expressed quickly moments. I liked the exchange she has with her friend, the blacksmith lady, just really, really well done, really quick to the point, but really well done. Her interaction with Ross, who is like kind of mad at her because he also has a crush on her, but is just much more of a, you know, kick rocks kind of guy about that sort of thing.
I'm not sure who you're talking about, but it's definitely not Ross.
Not Ross. Ross is dead.
It's Varl.
Thank you. I get Ross and Varl confused, which is weird because they're not even close to being like each other. Ross, by the way, is also my favorite character of the first game. Just because of how much you find out about him after he's, you know, after he dies, that you realize, this is why he did this. This is why her life was the way it was. Really, really well done. It's in a very, very good game.
Yeah, there's a great callback to that in Forbidden West, Rossi, where she's talking to and trying to relate to another clone of Elizabeth Sobeck, and she's trying to understand why they are so different. And she realizes that
I'm glad that I spoiled myself, or I would be annoyed right now.
A huge chunk of it is hey, you're different because of Ross, which is really cool.
It's a big nature nurture thing you get there, and it's interesting. Yeah. And also, a new DLC for Horizon Forbidden West came out this week, and I haven't had time to play it, and it's making me crazy because I just want to sit down and play it for like 20 hours straight.
Like a lot of...
Don't have the time.
That's pretty much what I've done.
Yeah, I got to get this out there for people who are playing this on a PS4. The new DLC is not coming to PS4. Cyberpunk had the same thing where the new DLC is not coming for last gen consoles. It's only going to be on next gen consoles.
I was flying around Burning Shore and thinking to myself, man, this is going to be really hard for them to squeeze onto the PS4, but I guess they just didn't. So
yeah, they can't.
I remember very clearly that Dragon Age Inquisition did the same thing with the Trespasser DLC, which was like, that's a big story thing. And if you're a fan of Dragon Age, you really want to play it. And they were just like, yeah, this we can't do this with last gen console technology. We're only making it for the PS4.
And I guess it raises an interesting conversation yet again, is like, when do you stop developing for the last gen console? And is it when the technology fails, when it can no longer handle it, or do you start moving before that? And it looks like, at least in these cases, they've waited till the hardware can't support it anymore, at least. So
the PS4 is one of the most popular consoles ever made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It ranks up there in terms of like the PS2 was probably the only PS that rivaled it in terms of popularity. And that's another one that hung out forever.
Did I tell you what my most popular 3D print that I sell is? It's feet for the PS4 to keep it elevated so that it could stay cooler, with the current demands that like latch onto the side of the console to keep it raised. Like you are not lying. It is very popular.
And as a result of that, I think it extended that generation's life past where it would have been otherwise.
Oh, easily.
Also, I mean, I say that it's not like the Xbox series. I mean, the Xbox One was also the One X in particular was also very popular.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the more popular Xbox consoles.
Yeah, I don't think it ever got to PlayStation 4 levels, though. No, back of the envelope here, I'm wanting to say Xbox One was like 50 million ish to 60 million. PlayStation 4 is like 120 million.
Oh yeah, no, the PS4 was by and far like one of the more successful consoles, period. More so than either the PS5 or Xbox Series X have been to this point. But I'm not expecting either of them to hit those levels because of the time period they came out. But as a result, I mean, a lot of games were released for the PS4 and the Xbox One that had no business being on them.
Yeah.
Like, straight up, Horizon Forbidden West, when I was playing it on the 4, my 4 was glowing like a monolith or something. It's like, oh, okay. If the console turns into a Borg cube, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to expose it to this much, but unfortunately, I really wanted to play this game. But yeah, so that's one of the things that even happens for like new computer generations. Like every time an expansion comes out, it's always, you know, must have these things. And you look at the stats, and it's like the stats to play the last expansion on, like, you know, Ultra, you know, could barely even run the next expansion. Sometimes it's like, wow, okay, I don't know what they're doing in this one, but it's pretty demanding apparently, because it's just the nature of it. You know, people want to hold on to stuff. But at the same time, technology keeps advancing and companies want to take advantage of it. So it's a thing that happens with all games. Liz, Big Battle Bear, that's this week. When does that end?
That ends on the 27th, which is Thursday. So if you are listening to this and it's after Thursday, I'm sorry, you have lost your chance. If you're listening to us live or you're a Patreon supporter listening to it early, 27th is your last chance to claim the Big Battle Bear on Amazon Prime. However, we have learned that there is a new Prime Gaming drop coming after the Big Battle Bear, possibly immediately after. We don't know what it is. We're supposedly going to find out about it soon. So even if you don't get the Big Battle Bear, there's going to be something else for you next week.
Yeah, I've been, my wife hadn't actually understood the what they're doing with Twitch drops. So I explained to her that a lot of the drops were stuff that was in the card game.
Let me switch around. This is not a Twitch drop.
This is Prime Gaming.
Prime Gaming reward, yeah. Which is a different thing, though they also overlap in a huge way because Amazon owns Twitch, and also you need to have your Twitch account linked to your Amazon account and your Battle.net account linked to your Twitch account. It's like there are many layers to claiming this. It's pretty simple, but there are like 5 or 6 steps that you have to link this to that and link this to that. But anyway, if you haven't done it, if you're an Amazon Prime subscriber, go to Prime Gaming, find the big battle bear, and follow the instructions on the website, because it's too much. It's too much for me to just talk through.
Yeah. Sounds like you barely have enough time to do it, too.
The bareness.
I just claimed mine this afternoon. No promises that we'll get another bear, but maybe it'll be a whole year of different bear mounts via Amazon Prime Gaming. I don't know.
Didn't they have a polar bear mount for one of the BlizzCons?
Yep.
I thought it was really early, but maybe I'm just,
it was really early. It might have been 08. I think it was 08. I'm looking it up.
That moment when you realize there
2008. Yeah.
Oh, good.
I have approximate knowledge of stuff.
In 5 years, we will be on the 20th BlizzCon. No, I'm just not going to talk about it. We could mention the Greedy Emissary event, and WoW. We don't know when exactly that's going to be.
We do. Starts on May 25th, and it runs through June 16th.
See, now, May, if I could see today, I would have seen that you put that number there. You actually have dated all these, but I can barely see, so I didn't notice. Okay, yeah. That would have spared me some embarrassment. All right, so yeah, that's basically... it's a WoW event basically saying, hey, Diablo 4 is coming. Here's an event, right?
I mean, yeah, it kind of is. We don't know all of the details about it, but it will have one of those very nice experience and reputation buffs. So,
the Winds of Sanctuary, I think it was called?
Yes, I believe so. Okay. So, I mean, usually we get Winds of Wisdom for, but now we're getting Winds of Sanctuary. Nothing
related to Sanctuary is even remotely wisdom. Nothing wise has happened in Diablo for a very long time.
But there is a new pet you can get, the Baal pet, like a sheep, Baal. I think.
Yeah.
Baal. Yeah, it's Baal. Not Baal. It's like Baal.
Baal. I don't know. There you go.
I don't know if that makes any sense, but and we don't know how you get it. There are some cosmetics. There's this pet that are all kind of Diablo themed. We don't have the complete details yet, but Diablo! The real problem with this event is it actually overlaps with the release of Diablo 4. And I understand it's like you're promoting Diablo 4 over here, but it's like I can't do both of these things at once.
Well, it's not the first time they did that. They did that with like StarCraft 2 and WoW and some other cross games in the past too. So. I remember there being some cross-promotional stuff with that. I don't
think being a problem, because as soon as Diablo 4 comes out, everything else will cease to exist for me for about a month. especially reading that it's going to take about 150 hours to get to level 100 means I have to carve 150 hours out of the month of June. So yeah, eating and sleeping and talking to people, these have to go. These are dead weight.
You know, after the beta, after those 2 beta weekends, Blizzard sent around an email that were like, here are your accomplishments. And it said I'd played like 63 hours of the beta over 2 weekends. And, you know, the immediate response was, was the beta even up for 62 hours? How did this work? How does time function? But yeah, that's probably what I'm going to do. It's just everything is Diablo and everything hurts.
Yes.
Because it's such a terrible world. Bad things are happening to everyone.
Plus, I haven't slept in 2 days. So yeah, I feel like I understand your anxiety and pain and fear because I'm experiencing it. I think that's basically it. I mean, we didn't mention Children's Week, but Children's Week is from like the 1st of May to the 28th of May. And if you've ever done Children's Week in WoW before, it's that. And if you haven't, you take an orphan and run around showing them cool things that they want to see, and then the Bronze Dragonflight almost murders them, but you talk them out of it. That's children's
book. Yeah. I have not heard that there's anything new in this Children's Week, but we'll see.
Yeah, if there is, then that'd be great. But at this point, however, we're going to do that thing we do where we answer a few questions. We've got a couple different ways to do that. And since Curtis is here, I'm going to have fun making him read an email. but you can email us at podcast@blizzardwatch.com, subject line podcast of Blizzard Watch, so you know it's for this show. Because if you don't, then I don't know what's going on, and I grab things willy-nilly like I'm doing a shopping spree episode of a TV show. But also, if you'd rather, you know, send us stuff on Discord, which a couple of folks did this week, thank you, you can do that as well. We have the Patron Q&A Podcast Questions channel for patrons, which we look in first because, you know, patrons keep the lights on and keep the site going, and we really appreciate that. So we like to give back a little bit. But if you can't be a patron, we totally understand. Life is tough and everything is melting. So if you can support us in other ways, like, you know, just be on the forums, just, you know, tell people to read our stuff yourself, stuff like that. We still check the Q&A Podcast Questions channel for non-patrons because, you know, we want to take as many questions as we can, if at all possible. So, yeah. Curtis, if you don't know, usually what happens is we have one of these two read the emails because, you know, my eyes are what they are, and then we answer it. This time I'm going to make you do it, but you can pick any one of the questions we've got in the email and go ahead and read it, and we'll answer it. So go ahead. Cool. Have fun.
By the way, long time listener, first time on. So yeah,
I'm familiar. I am aware of what you do.
Oh, let's see. Huh. I guess I'll just start at the top here. Let's go with Roxy. Question for the podcast. It's your friend Roxy here with a question about a new trend in the WoW community. What do you all think about this new hardcore movement in classic hardcore, and retail, KSM hardcore? My understanding are it's basically a solo experience where if you die, you delete your character. I know classic also allows you to run dungeons once, no auction house usage, and no receiving purposeful help from anyone. They have a dedicated Discord and even an appeals process from mulliganing deaths. Should Blizzard try to support these challenges more directly? Does that mean I have to answer it first?
You can.
You don't have to.
You can kick it to one of us to do it too.
I love emergent gameplay. It's one of the coolest parts about working on an MMO. And I mean, I just saw a friend at Blizzard posting today that she was looking for people to come run hardcore stuff. I think so that she could just chat about it while she was doing it. And so, yeah, no, it's really cool. And I love to see the WoW community still coming up with new ways to digest the content and dig around.
Yeah. Go ahead, Liz.
One of the things is that there's some data mining suggesting that the team may be working on some kind of hardcore mode, like a specific hardcore server, which I'm totally with you about the emergent gameplay. I have no desire to play a game like this, but it is fascinating to see other people do it. And I love it when people are like really into things, if that makes sense. It's great to see people having fun and enjoying the game in their way, even if it's totally different than what you expect or how you play.
Yeah.
I used to say when Annabelle first came on the site and she was talking about pet battles with me, I think my exact expression was, I love pet battles because I never have to do them. I love anything that can be there if you want it and can
that's
be ignored if you don't want it. That is my favorite.
Yeah, like that.
One of the things that, sorry, go ahead, Joe.
No, I was just going to say, that's one of the things I look forward to in like in gameplay like this as well. Like if it is going to be officially supported, which is perfectly fine if that's, you know, the way they want to go. And it wouldn't be the first time we've seen a game developer like ingest or support a community driven experience, or embrace it, or make it something that, you know, they can give tools like toggling it on or offer a server for it and enforce the rules. As long as it's not something that's, you know, a necessity and just remains an option, I'm all about people playing games the way they want to play games and having fun the way they want to have fun. So,
yeah, I mean, Diablo has had hardcore mode since Diablo 2. Yep. I have successfully not played it since Diablo 2, and I look forward to not playing it in Diablo 4. I don't do hardcore modes. You know, I'm not playing video games to challenge myself. Quite frankly, at my age, And with the illnesses and injuries I have, playing a video game is harder than it used to be. I don't need you to make it harder for me. Difficulty modes are sufficient. I don't need hardcore. But if you want it, cool. Go for it. It should absolutely be there. I totally don't mind. And I do like the idea of emergent gameplay. The idea of, I think this goes back all the way to the original Battle for South Shore, which nobody expected to be anything. Like, people just started fighting at Taran Mill and South Shore for no reason. There was no, like, there was no treasure. There was no prizes. There was nothing. There was no reason to do it, but we did it anyway. And that kind of became a thing. So yeah, I definitely think it is something worth having, and I'm looking forward to seeing.
One thing I think is really interesting about a lot of these kinds of emergent gameplay situations is, like, I have never been at the level where I feel like I could make these kinds of resource allocation decisions, right? But, you know, one of the things that a hardcore play style does is it focuses a lot of attention on your early game, right? Because people are playing it and dying and then having to play it again and then dying, having to play it again and dying. So if your early game has some weak spots or some parts that drag on or whatever, a hardcore mode will really expose that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's interesting to see people embracing this idea in WoW. I'll be interested to see how it kind of plays out there, because it's going to focus a lot of attention on early game WoW, right? Which, you know, if you think about WoW as a model and as a business, right, it's probably one of the places that has not gotten as much attention as a lot of in-game stuff, because more players are in-game and more people are focused on in-game. That's not to say that, like, people don't think about the level up experience, but it's an opportunity, right, to get direct feedback on stuff that we probably haven't gotten as much feedback on since it went in the game.
All right. Liz, Joe, you have anything else to say on this one?
Mm. I think particularly with level boosts these days, there are a lot fewer people leveling characters, so I can really see how that can become not a focus, because you're going to get so little feedback on it.
Fair point. Joe?
I have nothing else to add.
All right, Curtis, you get to pick who gets to answer the next one.
Okay, I'm going to say
the next one. Sorry.
Liz has to do it.
Okay, question from Tetsimi. A question for the Blizzard Watch podcast. What stories would be better presented, engaged with in an action RPG versus a multiplayer MMO-style game? I feel like we always get the Cliff Notes version of stories/lore in an MMO because they're constantly trying to get you to end game systems. What WoW story would you love to experience in a longer format ARPG as opposed to an abridged MMO version? And I'm gonna toss this one to Joe, because I feel like we always talk over Joe and he sits in the background waiting for us to finish. So tell us, Joe.
I am perfectly content. There's a lot.
I'm going to turn you out, Joe, now. No.
There's a lot. There's a lot of really cool story moments or elements that we, to somebody's right, we get like Cliff Note versions. That's sort of just part and parcel with like the whole MMO experience, right? You only have so much time to do things. And going back to something we were talking about, I believe, pre-show, where we're talking about like Star Wars, The Old Republic and stuff like that. Like, those had very, like, in-depth storytelling experiences, because that's basically what the game is built on. While WoW has that built into it to a certain degree, it's still first and foremost an MMO, and then secondarily it is a story vehicle, where most of the story is done nowadays externally or through cutscenes and not through gameplay. If we were going to start doing things that were more in-depth or have things that were more of, like, a single-player RPG experience, I'd like to go back to things like The Sundering. I'd like to go to stuff like the Black Empire and the war between the old gods and the Titans and the Titan forces. I'd like to go back and maybe have, we went through the Caverns of Time. We had that moment with Azjara with the War of the Ancients, and we've had a couple interactions with it, in various formats. Like I think in Legion, we also went back and, we did the why can't I think of his name now? Matt, help me out here. Mountain? Thank you. The High Mountain quest line. And that was during that. Yeah. I'd like to see the opportunity to experience more of those stories more in depth, have more of the opportunity for characterization and more of the opportunity for the relationships between the characters that we know are there and were forged all those years ago. And we've read about them but I'd like to be able to experience some of that. Like imagine being able to play through the experience of that weird love triangle of Tyrande and Illidan and Malfurion and having to deal with the fallout of all of that and you know where they fit in society and everything else. I think like stuff like that would be really cool to explore in sort of like an RPG element. So that's my two cents. What do you guys think?
I would like an entire game set in Azmerloth.
Why, yes, Varian. Yeah, that sounds like a great idea.
Yes, let's just do a whole game where everyone is a Murloc. And I don't know. Just let's do this. Let's go to Azmerloth and stay there for a while. How did we find this alternate universe? How did this alternate universe come to be? Or maybe just hang out and enjoy everyone being a Murloc for a while.
And an entire game that starts with that moment we accidentally send the Murloc through the time portal, and it's just, you're the Murloc. I would play that all day long. Matt, Kurt?
I feel like this is a hard one for me to weigh in on just because of so much internal experience and discussion. So
not
fair enough.
I will say, I think I've said publicly before that, designing story in an MMO is really, really hard. And I don't envy our quest designers having to try to do it. I don't remember who on the podcast said this, but years and years and years ago on this very podcast, I think somebody said that they would love to play a WoW Skyrim. I don't blame you. I think that there's a world there that would be really cool.
Okay, I'm just going to say first off that I want to resist my urge to be curmudgeonly, but I do have to say this. I don't know that it's necessarily an MMO thing as much as it's a Blizzard thing. And this isn't to criticize Blizzard, but a lot of times in the past, there have been people who used to work at Blizzard who don't work there anymore, who used to say things like, well, we're not really a story company. We're mostly a game company, and we make choices of gameplay over story. And I think that still kind of lingers there. Like World of Warcraft, it has a very deep and enriching story, but at the same time, it's gotten much more sophisticated over the years. When it started, a lot of the story in World of Warcraft was just there to get you from point A to point B. It was just like a scaffolding that gave you things to fight, gave you quests to fill out, and that was basically it. Again, they have gotten a lot better since Legion, in my opinion. I think that their team is one of the best, but it's still worth pointing out. Another thing is that there are ARPGs that Blizzard's put out that have not, like, I love Diablo 2, but the story of Diablo 2 is not super deep.
No.
It is not trying to be. And the story of Diablo 3 is even more, like, the story of Diablo 3 is like, well, Diablo 2 took too long to get there, so we're going to put you in this fast, fast car and drive it at the wall really fast. And then you're going to go through the wall. And it's going to be on fire, and it's going to be ponies. Like, you know, it's just, it's there, but it's like, it is not the point. If you're playing Diablo 3, the point is not the rich lore and storytelling. I say this as a dude who can sit here and talk about the lore of a Diablo for an hour and have done so. But not all ARPGs have a deep in explorative backstory. And not all MMOs are the way Blizzard did MMOs back in the day. Nowadays, I think Blizzard has really, Blizzard as a whole, the story and development team at Blizzard is a multi-game platform. It's not just WoW, it's everything. And it's got some really talented people on it. And then the narrative team for the individual games, also, again, really talented people. It's definitely different than it was. But at the same time, you can't really blame that on MMO versus ARPG, because you see it, again, playing Diablo 2 or 3, comparing it to Diablo 4, Diablo 4 in just the beta test had a deeper, more entrenched story than anything I've ever seen in the Diablo game by orders of magnitude. There's like little moments of environmental storytelling that would not be out of place in a CD Projekt Red or a Bethesda game. like little bits, like where the woman is just talking to her husband's grave saying, I can't sleep because, you know, you're not there and you're not snoring. And who knew I couldn't sleep without the snoring. And you're like, whoa, okay, that is a moment you would not have gotten in Diablo 3. You would not have had time for this moment in Diablo 3. There would be 75 demons over there that needed you to hit them right now. So I don't feel like that's WoW's fault. And I don't think that you can necessarily break it out into an ARPG and you'd get a better experience. That being said, I really want... The thing about WoW, it's time scale. If you think about how much time has passed between things, is enormous. Like, in human history, we can go back and actually know about societies that existed 5,000, 6,000 years ago. In World of Warcraft, you could be hearing about a dude who, like, lived 20,000 years ago from a dude who has been alive since 20,000 years ago and is telling you about it like he's telling you about the day he had some pie. Like, the time is so much deeper. I would love for them to actually play around with what the heck that means in a story. But I don't know that that's a good fit for an ARPG. Quite frankly, an ARPG about how long things take to do doesn't feel like necessarily the way to go. But I do like that idea of that exploring. So yeah, now who does what?
Well, I think we're at kind of time.
Okay, so we're not going to do the one about peeps. Good, because I don't like that one.
All right, so shall I do the thing, Matt?
Yeah, you should do the thing.
I will do the thing. Folks, thank you very much for joining us. Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch. Your continued support means that this podcast and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, better chance at having your question answered on our podcast, or the Q&A's free site experience.
Thank you very much, Joe. Thank you again for Curtis coming on the show. Really appreciated it, and it was really great to have you.
Thank you for having me.
No, it's... If nothing else, you got to confirm to me that people actually listen to the show.
I mean, so, I warned him and said he had a standing invite on the podcast, and he took it.
Yeah,
took it.
Like, it was great. He's like, I've listened to the show before. I'm like, oh my god.
We could do a whole Horizon podcast, and then it just it might just be Curtis and me talking back and forth.
Really. Listen, like, I have made an offer.
Set it up, Liz. I'm in.
I have made an offer for there to be a Lore Watch episode where it is literally just nothing but Horizon stuff. Liz and Kurt, you can just go.
I didn't know that Lore Watch went into stuff that wasn't Blizzard games.
If you we do all the time.
Occasionally.
Yeah. But anyway, guys, thank you to Liz and Joe as well, of course. Thank you to all of you for listening. Blizzard Watch, you know, it's a show we do. We love doing it. We're very glad that you're all here supporting us and making it possible. But this has been the podcast, and we will be back next week.